What goes into a good nap? You know, one that makes you feel refreshed, not groggy and out of sorts. This hour, we find out. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Is National Napping Day on your calendar? It's coming up Monday. Neurologist Dr. Eric Dykin of the University of Iowa Sleep Disorders Center joins us this hour with the do's and don'ts of napping. Dr. Dykin is also a contributor to a new edition of the Atlas of Sleep Medicine. Also, advice as we go into daylight saving time this weekend. And, of course, your sleep questions. The Science of Sleep after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Is National Napping Day on your calendar? No? Well, it's coming up on Monday. You better put it there. Today we're going to talk about naps. What goes into a good nap? You know, the ones that make you feel refreshed, like your brain has sort of been squeegeed clean, as opposed to those bad naps when you wake up feeling groggy, out of sorts, and grumpy. This is a regular sleep research and sleep news program here on River to River. We're joined by neurologist Dr. Eric Dykin of the University of Iowa Sleep Disorders Center, and he will also be glad later in the program to give us advice about sleeping problems you happen to have. Dr. Dykin, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Ben.
We want to talk a little bit later about the new edition of the Atlas of Sleep Medicine, which you, Dr. Dykin, have contributed to. We'll get to that. Fascinating talk about confusional arousal and night terrors in particular, though that atlas, as the title would indicate, is full of all kinds of strange sleep maladies.
Yep.
Before that, let's talk about napping, and we want to reach out to our listeners this hour to ask you, where's the funniest place you've ever taken a nap, fallen asleep? What conditions were those? 1-866-780-9100. You can also post it on our social media on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page, or tweet us at IPR Talk. The tweet is IPR Talk, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, the email. Let's talk, Dr. Dykin, a little bit about napping. Can you give us some do's and don'ts of napping, what I just mentioned? We all know the feeling of having a refreshing nap, and then the other part of having a nap you wish you hadn't taken because you're worse off.
Well, you know, we're getting old, and we've talked about naps for years. And years ago in the United States, we'd always recommend you not nap. Try to sleep, save up all that sleep drive for the nighttime, and you're wide awake all day. But as we know in different areas culturally, it's tradition people right around 1 to 3, you know, around the noontime area, lunchtime, they take a nap. And circadian rhythm strength, our biologic clock, likes right around 1 to 3 in the morning and 1 to 3 in the afternoon for sleepiness, follows our core body temperature. So, you know, taking a nap, you and I used to say, and I used to tell the people online, is just, no, do not take a nap. Save up that sleep for nighttime. Well, that might be fooling Mother Nature. And we had one of our truck driver buddies who called in online and said, Dr. Dykin, I did everything you told me. I didn't take that nap. I don't care. I was in the 40-ton rig. I was ready to fall asleep, but I kept driving. And I said, oh, my God. Huh. And that's where I saw the light, where I think naps have a place. I said, pull over right now.
Right.
And do this. And you had mentioned you can have a good nap. To me, I call it the delicious nap. You can taste it.
Ooh,
you can feel it.
That's a good descriptor. Yeah.
We empathize with that. We know what it is. We also know that nap where you feel worse than when you went to sleep. And that's called sleep inertia. And in fact, some people believe if you take a nap that's too long and you wake up with this crummy feeling, some people who may be genetically prone may actually be a bit confused and have acts of violence. Mm. So it's a forensic sleep medicine issue. But if you're going to do it right, you look at the time of the day you're most sleepy, and everyone's a little variable, around noon, if you will, the lunchtime, the siesta. And what you'd like to do, according to Bill Dement, who is the number one sleep guy in the world from Stanford, a good personal friend of mine, he anecdotally recommends this. And a Dr. Moss from the East Coast recommends something similar. You find your sleepiest time. And what you do is you take your 12 ounces of coffee and you drink it, because Caffeine, which is an adenosine receptor antagonist, it fights sleepiness, takes about a half hour to kick in. So you drink that 12 ounces, and then you lay down and take your nap at your sleepy time, and you set your alarm for a half hour so you do have a backup, you know, fail safe. Now, while you're taking your one-half-hour refreshing nap, your bladder is filling up with all that coffee. The caffeine's kicking in, so you have another thing that's going to try to wake you up in a half hour. The alarm goes off, and you often have a refreshing nap. If you don't take these precautions, you may sleep more than you should and feel worse. So this is a very generalism. Everybody can adjust it according to their own personal flavor, you know, add a little more salt, a little pepper, whatever it is. This doesn't work exactly for everyone, but it's an example that the world's greatest sleep disorder expert, Bill DeMent, recommends.
Okay. And we're talking about naps this hour on River to River. Dr. Daikin of the University of Iowa is with us, of the Sleep Disorders Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Dr. Daikin, according to the Huffington Post, a Boston University professor of psychiatric rehabilitation, William Anthony, and his wife, Camille, created National Napping Day back in 1999, National Napping Day to be this coming Monday. They said as a way to highlight the importance of napping. It's an unofficial holiday, of course. It falls after daylight saving time. That's this Saturday night, a time when people might be more nap ready. So it's not coincidental that this ties in with an hour shift in our schedule coming up this weekend.
Right. And in fact, and we've talked about that so often with the daylight savings time, that the 1 hour less of sleep, and this has been published in the New England Journal of Medicine many years ago, they've shown that when you compare the week prior and the week after, on that Monday after the change, there's a higher prevalence of motor vehicle accidents. Another study from the University of Alabama, Birmingham, showed that within that same period, the Monday and Tuesday following this shift, there's more stress on some people's system, fighting Mother Nature, the circadian or biologic clock that you've become adjusted to, and that little bit of sleep deprivation that we all have in Western society may lead to an increased risk for myocardial infarction, heart attack. So why not take a nap on the day where you may be prone to falling asleep driving a car or overdoing it and having a heart attack? And as such, like my truck driver, self-evident, you learn a case at a time. I think that makes sense if you can fit that into your schedule. And right. I like what Bill says, right around lunchtime.
Right. And unlike in the fall when we fall back 1 hour, we're springing ahead 1 hour. So we lose 1 hour this weekend. So on that Monday morning, we may feel shorted an hour and actually need it on National Napping Day. So it makes complete sense. We're talking about napping this hour. One of the questions throwing out, the funniest place you've ever taken a snooze, some answers to that in just a moment. But also, of course, when we have Dr. Daikin here, we want to take advantage of you having the chance to share your sleep problem, not only about napping or a funny place you've had a nap, but what keeps you awake at night. Share your sleep problem, your question about troubled sleep this hour. Hopefully Dr. Daikin, well, he always has in the past, will have some something to say in terms of a remedy, a direction that it will be useful to you. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Where is the funniest place you've ever taken a snooze? Well, that's the question that the Huffington Post asked on National Napping Day last year in 2012. Here are some of the posts on there, some of the tweets that they received. Very short. One, my daughter fell asleep in a drawer. Another, the CEO's hidden couch in office, woke by potential tenants waiting to sublease the building. Not sure who got the bigger fright. Here's another work-related one. I have fallen asleep on my desk. My office mate didn't appreciate my snoring. Serious. And another one, in the playground of London Luton Airport. It was the best three-hour nap ever. That must mean you're tired if you can sleep in a busy airport.
I would think.
Talk to you a little bit before we go back to maybe some napping input or other questions from our listeners, Dr. Daikin, about the new edition of the textbook, The Atlas of Sleep Medicine. It's a new edition containing a DVD which has video taken of patients while at sleep disorder clinics, and the disorders are shown include night terrors, sleepwalking, narcolepsy, confusional arousal, and sleep paralysis. You have contributed to this new edition of the Atlas of Sleep Medicine. In what way?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's to be released pretty soon. And what we're showing is, again, I think great science and great knowledge begins with anecdotes, simple observation. And seeing's believing, I'm from Missouri, show me kind of thing. When you see some of these patients do what you and I have done, but we were too embarrassed to bring up to anyone, you understand that they can occur, because some of them are pretty fantabulously, morbidly fascinating. And that's medicine. And if you can resolve them, because not all of them are as funny as a nap might be. Some of these are serious issues, as sleepwalking in front of a truck, which we've talked about before, which is a horrific thing that can be prevented.
Mm-hmm. And we wanted to go to this DVD in the Atlas of Sleep Medicine, the new edition, has some contributions that you've made here, I believe, from the sleep clinic, the sleep lab that you have here at the University of Iowa. And you brought along some sound. So we're going to take a little sound here. The first clip we're going to hear is of a woman who suffers from something called confusional arousal. Mm-hmm. Before we hear the clip, what is confusional arousal?
Well, Anna Freud did a lot of early work on parasomnias, and this is a behavior that occurs during and or in association with sleep. So it's a sleep-related phenomena, and we all probably do it. You're out on vacation. You're in a new area. Didn't get much sleep that night. You wake up. Look around, mumble a little bit, somniloquy, sleep talking. Your wife or husband looks at you, and then you put your head back down on the bed. And sometimes you might look a little frightened, very confused. But it's out of a deep, slow-wave sleep, and you go right back into the sleep. Not a big deal, unless it becomes a little bit more extensive or violent.
Mm-hmm. And so this is when it becomes a disorder, is when it's not just once or twice a year, but repeatedly, often during sleep, and it's disturbing your waking periods.
Or leads to injury.
Okay. What we're going to hear in this clip, doctor, is a different doctor, a sleep doctor, asked the woman to remember three words: ball, red, ball, and blue. And before we hear it, why does the doctor ask her about these three words?
It's really very strange. We've seen the broad spectrum of things, and sometimes people who are apparently asleep are not asleep, even though their brain waves look like it, like in narcolepsy, and they can remember things. So we want to see, does she cognate? Is she thinking, or is she asleep on her feet?
Okay, let's listen to this clip from the new edition of the Atlas of Sleep Medicine. It lasts about a minute, this on confusional arousal.
I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
For this, I want you to remember three things: ball, red, and blue.
I didn't do a thing all night long. I didn't do anything.
You didn't do anything. Are you okay? Okay?
Yeah, sleeping has just gotten to be a job anymore.
What were you thinking about?
I don't know. I thought I had to take some medication or take some. What did you ask me? I'm sorry. When I said I
asked you what you've been thinking about.
I just woke up thinking I was supposed to take some medication or get up and run some tests or something, and I just felt like I hadn't done any of that.
Were you having a dream?
I don't remember a dream.
Can you remember the three things I asked you to remember?
Red, ball, and blue.
Okay,
very interesting, that clip from a woman suffering confusional arousal, a sleep disorder, being interviewed by a doctor there. Now, what our listeners, Dr. Dykin, couldn't see was that on the video of this clip, the woman is thrashing around in the bed at the beginning. So this is common with confusional arousal when they're awakened. And then tell us also what's going on here when we hear her talking.
Yeah, and you know, it's just out of nowhere, as you said, a seeing's believing kind of a thing. So when this comes out, it's an interesting book to purchase and to look at these videos. She's just sleeping soundly as can be, then bam, out of nowhere. And that's the classic thing that especially little kids do. They'll often have a arousal like that, go right back to sleep. And Anna Freud said it's part of normal development, Piagetian, if you will. And we often outgrow these. But as we've seen with some of the adults we've talked to in the past and their families, sometimes, especially when you're under stress or pressure, and there's a Freudian element of, is this an inner cathartic element coming out in regard to a sleep behavior? And oftentimes what we do when we see an adult with one of these problems is simple counseling or treating the stress or pressure that the person is under. And oftentimes we see a parallel improvement in the confusional arousal. Mm-hmm. So it's coming out of deep slow wave sleep. Traditionally, the first third of the night, it sort of marks it, but God knows why it really occurs physiologically.
Now this woman said some interesting things. She's complaining that she didn't do a thing all night long, and then also that sleeping has become a job. So I would interpret that as this woman may be overworked and isn't even allowing herself to rest her mind when she's sleeping.
Well, and then you saw the progression. She went from confused. And so you can define a person as sleeping electrophysiologically with the brain waves that we were monitoring on this video that no one can see, and also clinically by looking at the patient. So if you don't happen to be wired up to a sleep study, you can ask these questions, and you know they're not functioning well. You don't want to get in their way because they're confused. And as she slowly came out of a sleeping state, she started bringing things together. She said, no, what did you ask me? Mm. But she's almost just rambling. And then we said, well, was it a definitive dream? No, it was, my goodness, what was it? Well, I was asleep and now I'm becoming slowly cognizant. And that's what you can see. But in children, they usually don't become cognizant. You get in the way and they can run into you. They can hurt themselves. They can fall down the stairs. It can become
so
a little
this
bit
can
more
be closely related to sleepwalking.
Exactly. It's the same kind of a phenomena of and it's a broad spectrum of confusional arousal to night terror to sleepwalking, where you can actually do what one of our young students did, walk in front of a truck.
Dr. Eric Dykin is with us, neurologist, director of the Sleep Disorder Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. We hope to, in a few minutes, get to your questions concerns about your sleep. But first, we want to listen to another a short clip from included in the DVD in the Atlas of Sleep Medicine, a new edition of that to which Dr. Dykin has contributed to. And in this second one, Dr. Dykin, this is a woman who is suffering from night terrors. And talk about that, because night terrors are different than nightmares.
Actually, it's worse than you said. This is a little girl who has fallen down the stairs during such events, chipped off the front of her teeth. They think she's having seizures. They're giving her anti-seizure medicines. It's not working. She's under tremendous stress, all sorts of family problems, and these horrific spells that are leading to injury. And that's what we're evaluating. Looking for seizures, movement disorder, just looking at her sleep in general. Is there something related to her sleep that's precipitating these confusional events?
Okay, let's listen to this clip of a young girl having night terrors. It's kind of disturbing to listen to. Let's have a listen.
No, don't fall on her. Don't fall on her. Hey.
So in this clip, the woman is the girl is also thrashing around in the bed. We see in the video more violent than the other video that we had. A person can really injure himself or herself during a night terror.
Yeah, and what you would like to do is to leave them alone, you know, guide them to the bed. But what happened in this video is our technician was trying to preserve the electrodes that she was ripping off her head, because she's going to have to put those back on, and got in her way. And she wasn't awake, and she was frightened and confused. And when you get in the way of somebody during one of these events, that can exacerbate things. And you don't want – we've learned we don't protect electrodes anymore. Just keep them in the bed, because she was fighting and punching and kicking and could have really hurt herself again, including the technician.
Okay, so this is obviously a great educational tool, the Atlas of Sleep Medicine, that you contributed to. What do you see as the biggest benefits of this new collection?
Well, you know, it's why I like coming on the public radio. I'm reaching thousands of people at one fell swoop. It would have taken me my entire career per lecture. The video, it's a new coming, if you will. It's like high-definition TV. We're able to let you see, to hear with confidentiality. And again, confidentiality is supreme. But the contribution of the patient lets you and me understand what's really going on. Seeing's believing. I'm from Missouri. Show me, kind of a thing, rather than, well, that was a boring textbook on what we've talked about forever. But once you've seen it, it educates. And, you know, in 10 years with all these great media elements, we're all going to be brilliant. Or at least well educated.
We're coming up on a break, but before that, we can slide in one caller here. We have a number of callers, as we always do on the days when you're with us, Dr. Daikin. Stephanie in Des Moines is with us. You, I'm looking at my screen. You have a weird napping place that you can remember?
Yes. When I was a child, I fell asleep on the bleachers, but I was on the support beams of the bleachers.
Oh, my goodness. Did you stay there or did you fall?
Oh, no. I stayed there just fine. I assumed it was from dance lessons I had as a kid.
So in a weird position, and somebody told you about this later?
No, I actually remember getting there and waking up, and I did it all intentionally.
Any sort of body aches or backache that one might expect here?
Well, my tummy kind of hurt from the bar, but that was about it.
Okay. Stephanie, thank you for that in Des Moines, asking, among other things, the funniest place you've ever taken a snooze. 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps a post on our Facebook is more to your liking, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Glenn is with us in Rockford, Illinois, listening. Glad to have you with us from Illinois, Glenn. You had a question about naps, I think.
Yeah, fascinating show. I wanted to ask Dr. Daikin about my girlfriend. Diabetic. He says, he's been told, naps are bad for diabetics. Is that true? And if so, why?
Okay, Glenn, great. Poor line there, but we got it. How do naps affect diabetes? We've got just over a minute before we go to break,
yeah.
Dr. Daikin.
Now, me just off the cuff hypothesizing. You know, it's interesting that diabetics and some people with blood sugars related to sleep during the latter parts of sleep can do what we call somogy, where they'll drop their blood sugars during sleep, and that can be life-threatening. And I think there's a generalism when physicians and nurses and healthcare professionals try to talk to patients. It's just like me talking to my mechanic. You talk in a generalism, but there are certain dangers associated with the sleep that are intrinsic to diabetics. And you have to be careful. You don't want to extend it to the point of saying, you know, I'm dangerously sleepy right now and I'm driving a 40-ton truck, but I've been told because of my diabetes I might die from. So you've got to, you know, take the positive and negatives. But I think that's what they may be alluding to. But in any given situation, sleep is probably good. But they're absolutely correct. There are things intrinsic to sleep that may actually be tough on people with asthma and a variety of other health problems. So monitor thyself well.
Okay. We're going to come back in just a few minutes to talk more with Dr. Eric Daikin, director of the Sleep Disorders Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, contributor to a new edition of the new textbook, Atlas of Sleep Medicine. We were listening to some sound from the DVD there just a moment ago. When we come back after the break, we want to devote most of the half hour to your questions. We're looking for this hour, the funniest places you've ever taken a snooze. Also, as we do most days when we have Dr. Daikin with us, what keeps you awake at night? Share your sleep problem, your question, and perhaps we can talk about it and benefit a number of other people because other people are likely to have a problem similar to it. 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find us on Facebook. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a minute. Checking in with the science of sleep this hour on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, neurologist Dr. Eric Daikin, director of the Sleep Disorders Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics with us this hour, and we want to get to your questions. Also, the specific question, because National Napping Day is on Monday, we're asking, where's the funniest place you've ever taken a snooze, but also taking other questions about what keeps you awake at night. If you'd like some advice from the good doctor, Dr. Eric Daikin, 1-866-780-9100. Find us on Facebook. Let's go, Dr. Wright, to our phone lines. We'll try to get through as many of the many interested people as possible. Susan is in Galena, listening to us from Galena, Illinois. Hi, Susan.
Hi, good afternoon. Enjoy your show. And I'm a sustaining member. I want to promote.
Oh, so congratulations. We're coming up on a fun drive. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yes,
Susan, you've got a weird sleeping place.
Yeah. When I was 6 or 7 years old, I find myself, awake on curled up. I don't know how I did it, but on the toilet seat, a closed toilet seat in the bathroom.
You did. And so that you had no memory of how you got there. You just remember waking up on that.
Correct.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we had moved twice in the 2 years or a year and a half or something. And I don't know if that had, but it only happened maybe 3-4 times, something mm-hmm. like that.
Maybe Dr. Daikin, my first thing is a concern about getting to the bathroom.
Well, that could be one, but we have the same problem. My son has done something very similar, but not on the toilet seat. He has been found napping at the base of the toilet many years ago on a Disney vacation, and I tripped on him. Like, I needed to use the facilities. And I said, my God, what are you taking the nap on the floor? He says, Dad, I can't take your snoring. And that's where I found my apnea. So do you have a roommate, a daughter, a sisters, brothers that snore like her?
Yeah. I was sleeping with a sister. Yeah.
I bet you your sister snores.
Same. Maybe that was a...
Oh,
Susan, thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
I have another question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
When I seem to be upset or bothered by something, I wake up around 3 a.m., and I've heard that's been called the bewitching hour.
Oh, a lot of people have that. Let's have Dr. Daikin address that. Thank you, Susan, for calling Galena.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
You know, as you allude to, there's a circadian rhythm, if you will, of different sleep stages we go through every night. And in about 90-minute intervals, 3 to 4 times throughout the night, we go into REM, rapid eye movement, dreaming or paralyzed sleep. And we probably always dream, but we don't always remember them. But again, if you're under stress or pressure, you often revisit what that recent stress or pressure was in REM sleep or dreaming nightmare sleep. And an arousal as such without memory for the dream is not an unusual event in the quote-unquote bewitching hour.
Mm-hmm. So can we interpret that as often to 2 or 3 in the morning, that perhaps our body, we were concerned about something during the day, but our body has recharged its batteries enough so that it wakes itself up when there's a high concern?
Well, it's also
in that lighter sleep.
One of the theories we have about memory is we take these recent memories, and the most important ones, and they're often the ones emotionally charged, and we may review them from our temporal lobe at night during this REM sleep. So, and there is an elevation of blood pressure, sympathetic activity, the get up and go system during REM sleep also. And I think if you bring that all together, again, we're having fun hypothesizing, aren't we? I think it makes sense why you might have these arousals, especially after a very busy day.
Let's go to Jillian in Iowa City. Hi, Jillian. Welcome to our program. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. What's up in your life with sleep?
Well, I have had problems sleeping pretty much all my life. I'm about 30 years old now. My issue has always been staying asleep. I do just fine. I fall in asleep within minutes, but I wake up anywhere from 10 to 15 times a night. For a long time, I took Ambien, and I decided I didn't want to be addicted to sleeping pills. So about a year ago, I just stopped it and just kind of deal with not sleeping that well. But I found out just about 2 weeks ago that I am pregnant, and I am sleeping even worse now.
Sorry.
I'm hoping for some advice. Yeah.
Sorry to hear that, Jillian. That is not a nice situation.
Well, I think it's great that she's pregnant.
I wasn't talking about that.
But yeah,
excited about that.
Mother Nature's not fair. My wife tells me this over and over, and sleep is tough. And one of the greatest times of a young woman's life, you're pregnant and you get all sorts of extra fluid on your system. You're at a higher risk for developing transient obstructive sleep apnea. That's actually a project of one of my fellows. You get low back pain, relaxin kicks in so that you get more lordotic and everything's more stretchable. And you got concerns about the baby, your future, your life. And it's normal to have a few awakenings every night. Most of us do that, but we often call them microarousals and don't remember them. Some of us are wired a little bit different than others, a little more hyper, if you will, and may have a little bit more problems with insomnia and frequent arousals. I wake up routinely at 4:45 every morning. I don't need an alarm clock, But about a half hour before an hour, I start looking at the clock. But I do okay during the day. So it's okay for me. But if I'm going to try to mimic John, Bob, or Teddy, I don't take the medicines.
So the advice for Jillian here with her problem?
My thought would be is you're a normal person who's just wired a little different than someone else. And as long as you're not pathologically sleepy during the day, first do no harm. Don't start taking drugs. You'll have more effects with the medications. You don't want to be on anything other than holistic medicine. Then with the baby, stick with your general practitioner, your OBGYN. They are the backbone of medicine for you right now, and they'll be very aware of all these problems that you're having with related to sleep and the pregnancy.
And then think about it. You would look forward to Jillian when the baby comes. The baby can wake you up 15 times a night.
And that will that'll
be pleasurable.
Jillian, thank you for calling from Iowa City. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Ann has been waiting on the line. Hi, Ann.
Hi there.
You're in Des Moines. What's on your mind in terms of snooze?
Well, I have a teenage son who is very healthy, eats right. I mean, we've had him checked at the doctor's office. He doesn't drink caffeine, very little screen time. He sleeps at night just fine. He works very hard in school, but he absolutely loves to sleep. He comes home, has a snack, and then asks, can I please go to sleep? He could nap for 3 or 4 hours at a time. On the weekend, he can sleep until noon or 1. I know he's growing. We're changing through pant sizes. Is this normal? Is this okay?
Yeah.
He really loves it.
I'm a bit concerned because he asks. My son does not ask. He just comes home, and it can be a 3 or 4 hour nap. He's a high school senior, and I think this is normalcy. This is what young kids do. It's a broad spectrum. But our teenagers are phase delayed, so to speak, relative to you and me. They tend to want to go to sleep later and to sleep in longer than what a person who is 30, 40, or 50 years of age. And it's just the way they are, and it's a phase delayed. And as such, there's a big controversy on whether they should actually be getting up so early to go to school at the socially acceptable times. And in Hennepin County, in Minnesota, and in Lexington, Kentucky, they've actually used this as an experiment, allowing kids to sleep in later and go to bed later according to their own biologic clock needs that are specific for the age. And my thought is, no, this is normalcy. It's just that he's fighting society's norms. And also, depending on what he does, he's a hardworking student. My son was just in plays last week. He's coming home at 1 o'clock in the morning, and he has to get up at 5 to make it in for madrigal practice. I don't know how the kids do it.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that, Ann. We wish the best to you and your son.
Thank you.
That you get some restful night's sleep. And this on Twitter, on our Twitter IPR talk. Ann, when we asked the question about the funniest place you've ever taken a snooze, Ann answers, while in Rome, I was really tired and took a nap on a street corner in a grassy area while waiting for friends. Well, we all know how tiring travel can be, even if it's like a fabulous city like Rome. Let's go to Indianola. Is it Jaron? Getting that correct, Jaron?
Jaron, yep, J-A-R-R-O-N.
Very good, Jaron. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm 23 years old. I work a full-time job, and I don't sleep basically ever. I get maybe 1 hour of sleep a night, 2 hours sometimes. I mean, an occasional night I'll get 5 hours, but that's hardly ever. When I was younger, I had terrible sleepwalking problems, sleep-talking problems, and now I've just dealt with it.
Wow, 5 hours of sleep is a good night for you. What do we do, doctor, about that?
Well, obviously, it's not without side effects, or you wouldn't be calling and being concerned. So my thought is you need to see your general practitioner as the first start. And basic part of medicine is the history. So what they need to ask you is, when do you go to bed? Is it a routine bedtime? How long does it take you to fall asleep once your head hits the pillow? Do you have a restful or a restless night of sleep? If it's restless, why? What causes you to wake up? When do you routinely wake up? And is it in a routine arousal whole time. How do you feel when you wake up? Do you have a headache? Do you feel sleepy? Do you want to go right back to bed? Do you push the snooze button? Then during the day, do you take naps throughout the day? How do you feel? Are you sleepy during the day? What is your body mass index? What is your weight? What does the back of your throat look like? Then we go to looking under the hood. The physical examination complements the history. Basic car mechanic work, basic medicine, history and physical. My thought is you obviously are getting very little sleep. We know humans have to sleep. We know we're physiologically wired. And my thought is you need more than some guy with a long white coat on the radio. I would start out with your general doctor, the backbone of medicine in the United States. See if he can figure this out with you. If it was just common sense, you would have figured it out a long time ago. If you need to then institute the use of a routine sleep diary to show that you are getting good sleep hygiene and practices, but if it gets beyond that, we'd be happy to see you in our clinics too if you need a specialist. But oftentimes, common sense prevails under the practice of a good family medicine or general practitioner.
That's what I was thinking too.
Jaron, well, we sure hope you can solve that problem because it doesn't sound pleasant at all, even though you are saying you're coping with it. Thank you for calling today from Indianola.
Thank you.
If you just joined us, neurologist Dr. Eric Dykin with us, director of the Sleep Disorder Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics.
Well, that was nice because he was thinking the same thing, as he said at the end. That's what I was thinking. It's common sense, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Carol in Guttenberg. Hi, Carol.
Hi, thank you. Boy, after listening to Jaron, I'm in good shape.
Well, everything's relative.
Yeah.
What's your problem, Carol?
I have a foot neuropathy, and for the most part, ice helps a lot during the day. In fact, my husband and I go cross-country skiing, and when I come back, I whip my boots off and walk around in the snow, and I am great for a while, but I've been to a specialist, and they tell me to get on gabapentin. Should I?
Well, I guess it's implicit that this is bothering your sleep at night?
Yes.
Ah.
I mean, either I don't get to sleep right away because my feet are bothering me, or I will wake up in the night, and I'll go and get my ice pack, and that, you know, as soon as they're colder, then I can get back to sleep.
Yeah, you know, and I can empathize with that. I have a little restless legs where I get this discomfort in my legs when I try to go to sleep, but it's usually not a problem. But I had a recent surgery and I had pain with that. I could not get to sleep because of this discomfort in my feet.
Uh-huh.
And I needed a specific medicine, a pain medicine, because that was the etiology. It was transient and I don't use the medicine anymore. Gabapentin. As a pain medication for peripheral neuropathy, if that's what is causing the difficulty with your sleep, is a great sleep medicine.
Okay.
So I'd listen to your doctors because not all sleep medicines have to be Ambien or Zolpidem or Esopiclone or all the other things you hear about. Sometimes Motrin works for me.
Okay. Carol from Guttenberg.
Thank you very much.
No
thank
problem.
You so much. We're
okay,
wishing
bye.
You a good sleep the next time you head hits the pillow. Stephen in Columbus City, Iowa. Hi, Stephen.
Hey.
Stephen, are you there? Stephen, not there. Let's go to Coda in Des Moines. Coda, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Very good. We can hear you loud and clear. What's on your mind?
Well, actually, I was going to go back to the funny stories, and I'm in the Army, and we have really weird sleep patterns in the Army because of training and the nature of our job, but so I was known for a while for being able to sleep basically anywhere by a lot of people. When we were training out in California, I used to sleep in the turret of one of our Humvees because I was our turret gunner during training. And so I'd just fall asleep at the turret and wake up and we're driving somewhere. But I was finally outdone by a guy who was sleeping in full body armor carrying a 240 Bravo, which is a machine gun, around his waist in chow line standing up.
Are your superiors there in the Army then? I imagine safety and readiness is first and foremost. That's looked after even when you are sleep deprived, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It is. That is an impressive story.
It's not sleep deprivation so much. It's just long, strenuous hours sometimes.
Well, Coda, thank you for that story and thank you for your service to our country.
Yeah.
No problem.
Coda joining us from Des Moines. Let's go to Chris in Cedar Falls. Hi, Chris.
Hi, doctor. I have an embarrassing problem. I have a tendency to initiate and participate in sexual activity while I'm sleeping, and I either don't remember or I wake up in the middle of it.
Well, that's exactly what we were alluding to in a little more refined terms, if you will, earlier on. There's a problem called sleep inertia, and we were talking about the naps, and this is where we sort of leap from the naps. And a lot of people believe if you get that bad nap where you feel worse than when you first went to sleep, or if you try to wake up too early in the morning, you may actually be attempting to wake up from what we call slow wave or N3 sleep. And when you wake up, you're just like the two audios that we listened to before. They come out of N3 sleep. You can be confused. You can have inappropriate behavior, and inappropriate's all relative. But they call it a sexsomnia. And oftentimes you don't remember a thing that you did, and sometimes it could be a little bit more dangerous and violent than usual. And that's a new branch of sleep medicine, forensic sleep medicine. Mark Mahalwal is one of the world's experts on these kind of parasomnias. Not everybody gets them, but when they get them, it sounds embarrassing because no one else knows that there is somebody else who may have it. And again, data-driven research. It's good to know there are doctors out there that are addressing things. But one of the best things you can do for this disorder is try to get 8 to 9 hours of sleep every night with a routine bedtime and awakening time, because your circadian rhythms are going to be a little bit more prone to this kind of a side effect, which is embarrassing because it's so unique, but it's a very big problem if you got it.
Okay, Chris, thank you for calling from Cedar Falls.
Thank you.
Columbus City, Iowa. Steve, we're coming up on the end of the hour. You have a brief question or comment.
Yeah, I'm a primary care provider, and many of my patients have probable sleep apnea. I try to get them sleep studies, and the cost of a sleep study is quite a barrier. I was wondering if there was any low-cost alternative.
Oh, yeah. Just pay attention for the next year. The thought is, throughout the nation, about 50% of non-comorbidity patients without major health problems will be able to do out-of-center testing overnight. A lot cheaper. In fact, we do it at a loss. And I went through with the CareFusion product, I went through a comparison with my in-lab study, and we hope to be doing these within the near future. It's going to be Mother Teresa. They're very expensive, but this is an easier, much cheaper way to do it. And for most patients, I think we're going to be able to afford good health care for the patients that you're already alluding to. Bring them on down. I think within the next year or so, we're going to be able to make this affordable health care.
Hope that helped. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, thank you.
Tab in Bettendorf. Hi, Tab. Coming up on the end of our show. Please make it quick. Got a question.
Hey, hi, guys. I'm just wondering if 10.5 hours of sleep a night for a guy my age is too much sleep.
What is the age of a guy your age?
56.
Okay.
Oh, people live that long, Ben? I don't know how old you are, but yeah, you might be my.
There's that bedside manner coming out.
Yeah, I think that's about my age. So
a little too much, you think?
No, there's a broad spectrum of normalcy. Some of us are, and okay. The scientific term is long sleeper and short sleeper. And on the bell-shaped curve, some people need 10 hours of sleep. And it's just at the feats of what we call idiopathic hypersomnia, but it's the way maybe you're made. And if you do well with it, great. Some people need 5 hours or less. If you're doing well with it, great. One of our previous callers was not doing well. So I think if you're not having a major problem, it's normalcy, and enjoy the delicious sleep.
Tab, thank you for your call from Bettendorf. Let me leave you with this, doctor. I know you're interested in the arts. I found this morning in the Business Recorder in Pakistan. That's a publication online. The world, quoting here, an edited version, the world is full of luxuries, glamour, and money, but good sleep has become a real luxury, unaffordable even by the rich. The director, Makrand Deshpande, has come up with an entirely unique thriller movie called Sona Spa, where you can buy sleep for yourself. The plot revolves around the spa where the girls sleep for you, called the sleep workers. Once the bonding between clients and girls gets settled, they will sleep for you, and you can go on with your daily tasks feeling well slept and relaxed, giving access to your dreams to the sleep workers. So if you commit any crime in your sleep, goes on the article in the Business Recorder, they would know it as well, the sleep workers. The concept of spa is based on the belief that it is necessary to commit crimes in your sleep or else you would commit them when awake. That taken from the Business Recorder in Pakistan.
Well, you know, it sort of sounds like Book of Mormon. As long as you can think it and don't do it, but then that's a controversy too. But isn't that interesting?
Give us the contact information. We mentioned your center so often. Can you tell people how to get in touch as we close our show
today? The center is 319-356-3813. Anything major or interesting, give us a call.
Dr. Eric Dykin, director of the Sleep Disorder Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals. Always a pleasure to have you come in. Yeah. Thanks for coming over.
Lots of fun. Thanks.
River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting, if you missed part of the show, want to hear it, we always archive them online. Go to iowapublicradio.org. Tomorrow on this program, in the aftermath of Sandy Hook, schools are changing their intruder response procedure from a stay put and a hide method to a flight or fight response. We'll find out about that tomorrow on this program. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.